speaking today with Councilmember Stephen Costello, and we're going to talk about the Proposition 1 on the ballot, which is the actual official ballot for the Renew Houston proposal to create a dedicated drainage fund for rebuilding and fixing Houston's drainage and sewer systems. So the first question I have regarding this is, you say on the website that the idea here is to essentially convert Houston's existing system of paying for this through debt into a pay-as-you-go system. And how do we get there from here? I mean, we're still going to have to be paying off the debt that we currently have. So how do we get to that system? And how long does that take?
Okay, that's a good point. But let me just clarify what Proposition 1 is. Proposition 1 is to establish a dedicated funding source for streets and drainage. And it has four sources of revenue over the life of the program. The first is a developer impact fee. The second is the third-party money that the city gets, like, for instance, that we get from Core Mobility from Metro. The third is the drainage user fee, which I trust we'll talk about. And then the fourth is this pay-as-you-go plan. And the pay-as-you-go raises over the life of the program about 60% of the money. Now, what we did was, in the charter amendment, is we sat down with the city and we asked the city, okay, how much money in the current debt service of the general fund is related to streets and drainage? Of that $260 million in debt service, 68% of it is related to streets and drainage. That equates to about 11.8 cents of the 63.8 cents that we pay in ad valorem taxes. So what we said to the city was, we want to roll that into a pay-as-you-go plan. So take all of that debt, put it into this pay-as-you-go plan, and continue to make the same 11.8 cents payment. And as the debt goes, gets amortized, the excess money that comes off the debt will stay in the plan for capital improvements. So what happens is, over the life of the program, in the early years, the first 5 or 6 years, there's very little money coming off of it because most of the debt service is relatively flat. And we really start getting the lion's share of our money in the outer years. 10 through 30 of the outer years is where we're getting quite a bit of money into the program. Initially, we'll see probably within year three, we'll get about $10 million in excess. You know, less debt service. By year 10, it's probably somewhere in $100 million. By year 20, it's somewhere in around $300 million. So cumulative is quite a bit of money, but it's those first few years. And the reason why it's so little initially was because the city had operated on a deficit for many years. And what they were doing was, in order to kind of fill that gap, was to refinance their debt. And what they were doing was, they were essentially not only taking advantage of market rate, but they ended up extending the debt. So we were getting this debt, let's say, for instance, if we sold bonds, 20-year bonds, 10 years ago, we started refinancing them. Well, now, they're now probably still a 20- or 30-year bond rather than a 20-year bond. So what this says, what the program is saying is, take all those bonds now, put them into this pay-as-you-go, and never refinance them. Just pay them off. And then that money just stays in the program as the bonds get paid off.
All right. So if I understand this correctly, in the first few years of the money that gets taken in from the different sources, a significant portion of it will be going towards debt service just to knock that down. Is that accurate?
No, because what we have is the other three sources of money will be in the city system. And so the first year of the program will be the drainage user fee will raise $125 million. And then we get around $100 million from Metro. And then we'll have about $8 million from the developer impact fee. So we'll have about $250 million for the first few years of the program. And then as the debt starts to expire, then we'll start getting extra money from the debt market.
All right. So let's talk about the user fee, which is the fee that will be charged to property owners. How exactly does that work?
Well, the thought process was that basically the problem that we're having to solve is an existing drainage problem. And if you think about when people say, well, doesn't detention solve the existing drainage problem? No, what detention does, it mitigates for whatever you're developing to match existing conditions. You're never solving an existing problem. So the thought process was, why shouldn't everybody participate within the city to solve the existing drainage problem? So what we did was we took a survey of the entire city, downloaded all of the HCAT data, and by user group we know how many households there are. There's about 400,000 households in the city of Houston. And then the rest was the other users, what we call non-residential users, which is commercial, industrial, schools, institutional buildings, the like. And so we figured out that based on an impervious cover, how much it would cost each one of us monthly to raise about $125 million. And impervious cover, what we mean is hard surface. So if you look at your house, it's your footprint of your building, footprint of your house, maybe if you have a patio, your driveway and your garage, that's the hard surface. And so that's how we figured that out. And then what we did was we figured out that in a subdivision that's serviced by storm sewer system, it costs more to build and maintain than a subdivision that's serviced by roadside ditches. And so there's we projected a credit for a lesser amount of a user fee if you live in a neighborhood that has roadside ditches and if you live in a neighborhood with streets and drainage. We estimate that the drainage user fee will be about 3.2 cents per square foot of impervious cover per year. So an average household of about a 5,000 square foot lot and a standard size house will pay around $5 a month or $60 a year.
All right, so I guess the next question would be, once you start raising this money, and you have this fund to go towards fixing streets and fixing drainage, how does that money, how does it, what process will be used to determine what gets fixed?
Right.
How does that differ from what we have now?
Thank you for asking that. Before I go answer that question, just to get back to the drainage user fee, the charter amendment says that the city will figure out what that fee is. Renew Houston has made some recommendations to the administration, and the administration has decided that before you vote, that they will be on publicly telling you what that fee is. And I know that the mayor plans to roll that out sometime before the end of the month. She's committed to doing it. So we should hear that from the city shortly. To get back to how things are built, what's happened today is because of the fact that the CIP is within the general fund, there is a lack of money for drainage and street improvements. Whereas in water and sewer, our water and sewer bills fund the water and sewer program. There's nothing that funds the streets and drainage program. So if you look at the budget process, over 60% of the dollars within the general fund goes to public safety, which is needed money. So what happens is everything else the city does is competing for the other 40%, which is solid waste, libraries, parks, housing, public health, and by the way, streets and drainage. So every year you have people that are advocating for those particular quality of life issues, but nobody's really advocating for streets and drainage. And so what happens is, right or wrong, politicians will look at a project like a street and drainage project that might be $5 or $6 million and say, how about we defer that because we need this money for some of the other quality of life issues. So it's a decision that we all make personally, even in our own households. The problem is that it's been happening for many, many years, and our system has become neglected. Over 65% of our system is beyond its useful life. Also, what happens is that because there's a shortage of money, what you have is you have your 9 district council members competing for whatever dollars there are for capital improvements, streets and drainage. And so what happens is now the CIP is in the political process rather than in the needs process. So within the political process, it's based on who has enough political stroke or who's cutting deals with whom to get what projects need to get built first. Right or wrong, that's what's happening. Whereas now, if we have a dedicated funding source that's an annual funding source, then you can do everything on a needs basis and prioritize on a need and not prioritize it based on the political aspect.
Who gets to make those priorities? What's the process?
And that's a good question. Right now, what the city is doing is we are currently doing a stormwater prioritization program for all the drainage projects in the city. And we're prioritizing them based on several factors. One is where there's structural flooding, where there is street flooding, where there is maybe not flooding, but too much ponding, where we have public safety facilities, where we have emergency issues, and if we have too much bonding where emergency vehicles can't get in. And so this program is going to download all the projects in the city and prioritize them based on these series of criteria. In addition, what we're also doing today is that we're doing a pavement assessment program, and we're literally driving every street with a piece of equipment that looks like an armored truck that has lasers on it that measures the deflection and cracking of the street and determines scientifically what the life of the street is. Years ago, engineers would just go out and look at it and say, okay, it's got a five-year life. So we're going to take those two prioritization programs and put them together, and then we'll download everything and see how the city looks like on a needs-based system. The only way you can do these projects on a needs-based system is if you have a continuous source of money. That's what the beauty of the program is.
All right, so, you know, once you've crunched all the numbers and you've got this list of priorities, is the order that it comes out, you know, the final word, or is there still some judgment involved? And if so, who's making that call?
It has been, and a little frustrating on my part, is this long, long suspicion of the general public of the city, whether or not we're managing money properly. And I think not only are we trying to sell a valuable program, but we're trying to overcome the suspicion of everyone from the city. And so what the mayor has decided to do is set up an advisory committee. It's probably going to be about six or seven people that have nothing to do with or to benefit from the program, who will advise probably a separate department within Public Works that's going to be responsible for just streets and drainage, which is what we have in Public Works for water and sewer. We have a separate group. And so there'll be a decision process between the advisory group and the department what projects need to be done when. And then obviously the administration will have some role. The beauty about this needs-based system is because the need is so large, and because you can't debt finance a continuous problem, that's what the pay-as-you-go plan, that's why it's set up, is because you can then fund a needs-based system.
All right, and suppose, you know, this list comes out, and someone in a particular neighborhood looks at it and says, you know, my neighborhood has these problems, and we're showing here that we're a low priority, it's going to be years before you get to us. What way do I have to change that? Or is that kind of antithetical to the whole point?
Well, it's going to happen. If the program gets passed, we could literally redo and repave over 75% of the entire city. So eventually, everyone will get taken care of. However, there are certain areas that are higher priority than others that have to be done first. And what Renew Houston is advocating for is a transparent system so that once a program gets set up, that we can just go online, we can see what projects are being when, what projects are being done when, and you can click on a project and then you can see the status of the projects, which has never been done before. I always tell everybody to get an idea on what we're recommending is to go to a website from Florida called FDOT, which is Florida Department of Transportation, because they've been doing this transparency system for many years now, where you can get on their website, you can see what highway projects are being done, you can go to the right for the highway project and figure out what status is and what's going on. And the reason why we say that is that in Florida, the Secretary of Transportation annually has to go before the legislature and explain why projects are being delayed or what's the success of this program and what's being put from it. We think we can set up something very similar to that within the city, which we've never done before. And that's a recommendation I'm going to make to the administration.
Okay. One of the criticisms that I hear of this project, you know, Renew Houston Proposition 1, is that since it's essentially being led by civil engineers, you know, they will then stand to benefit from it, since there'll be a whole lot of engineering work to be done to you know, fix these streets and drainage problems, and that essentially the engineers are doing this to enrich themselves. How do you respond to that?
Well, if I made my living off the city of Houston, I'd be out standing in the street waiting for someone to give me some money. Here's the issue. The issue has to do with who better to identify the need than a civil engineer. Just like you would do when a doctor says to you, you need to come to my office annually for a physical. I mean, it's about your health. When a dentist says to you, you need to come to my office twice a year for a cleaning, it's about your health. The engineers are saying, this program needs to be done because it's about the health of the city. Well, sure, we're going to be the ones that do the design work. That's probably 15% of the program. The balance of the program is in construction. It's a job-related program. It's going to raise a lot of jobs throughout the city. it's a program that needs to be done.
Are there any considerations being taken in for things like schools and churches? I mean, schools in the city, of course, they have a lot of impervious property between the, you know, the, just the sheer number of properties they have, big parking lots and whatnot. Same thing with individual churches. They tend to have large parking lots. Is there any consideration done for them? Are they paying up the same way as everyone else?
According to the administration, and obviously that's got to be discussed with the city council, everyone is going to pay their fair share. You know, schools and churches buy water and sewer for service. They should pay for their drainage. I firmly believe that. I'm an advocate. This program is going to be set up under the auspice of Chapter 552 and Chapter 580 of the Texas Local Government Code. And in there, there are provisions on who is exempt and who is not exempt. I can just tell you who I know who is exempt, and that's state-owned facilities, institutions of public education and private of higher education, all the colleges, and agriculture use, and also vacant land. Everything else, everybody will be paying. So even though let's say, for instance, a school owns a large high school site, not all of it is developed. So the balance of it won't be charged. It would just be the part that's impervious or hard surface.
And, is there any consideration being given to adjusting rates based on people's abilities to pay, or for people, senior citizens, on fixed incomes?
We're advocating that everybody pay their fair share. Now, what happens between now and through the election cycle and right after the election, it's really up to the city to decide. So the city might decide they might give exemptions. I don't really know that.
In other words, what you're saying is, even if, you know, if the people approve this, there are still pieces of it that have to be finalized, and that is up to the mayor and city council to do.
I believe what the mayor is going to roll out a week from Wednesday will be her vision of what this program is going to be. Now, whether or not it has some of those exemptions you described or not, I don't know yet.
Okay. If this doesn't pass, what happens then?
Well, if it doesn't pass, if you look outside your house at your street, that's the best it's ever going to be.
All right. So give me the 30-second summary. Why should people vote for Proposition 1?
I'll tell you why I believe it's an issue. It's an issue because it's a quality of life issue. If you have your own house, the foundation of your house cracks, you fix your foundation first so it can support your structure. Our community, our foundation is our infrastructure. We need to reinvest in our infrastructure. It's also a quality of life issue. It's also an economic development issue. Who would bring their company to an area that they perceive to be a flooded area? They would not bring their company here. So that's an economic element. And it's also a public safety issue. We can't have cities shut down just because we have 1 or 2 inch rain and prevent our public safety people from being able to reach our houses. That's what I think this is.
All right. Councilmember Stephen Costello, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you. Appreciate it.